Accession number 28752, Reel 2.
Harry Borum, Reel 2. Harry, you were at Witteringham.
Well, yes, that was a big bomber station. And it was just a usual stuff. One thing I do remember, on the 14th of November, we were told to stand by, but not to fire. And that was the night they bombed Coventry. We could hear all the planes going over. And we got rescued back from.
So why did they tell you not to fire?
Well, I think it's to do with Ultra. If we were open fire, they would have known that we knew they were coming. So, I don't know. So, they're trying to protect Ultra, you know, the code. I don't know, I'm only surmising this, but we're told not to open fire anyway.
Can you explain Ultra?
Yeah, it's the German code which they broke, eventually broke. But the Germans didn't know we'd broken it. And if we'd opened fire, they may have surmised that we'd broken it. But this is only my idea. I'm not saying it's true. But every night they flattened Coventry. And
you found that out the next day, presumably. What were your thoughts then?
Well, they might do about it, you know. And it was pretty bloody, of course, but it was the war. It got much worse later on under the London Blitz. And so, while I was there, my troop commander, Sir Charles Shackford, showed up again, and he said, "Pack your kit, sergeant. You're going to Wright Troop to take those troops, sergeant." Bless you. So off we went to a place called the outskirts of London. Take over troop sergeant. That's a troop sergeant major. They got a bit slack and they wanted a bit blinding up. And I had to sort them out.
So this was just outside London,
yes,
was it?
Yes, on the south. It's
on the south?
No, no, the east. East. In Essex. Well, I'll forget the name of it now, but that's where I met my friend Frank Keller.
Is it?
He's the father of Simon Keller. You've heard of him, have you?
Yes, I have.
His father's Frank.
Really? So you met there?
Well, I was a troop sergeant. He might probably be a gunfitter. He was a real character.
Was he?
He really was.
Can you tell me something about your meeting?
Well, he's a gunfitter. He looks after all the technical side of the guns, you see. And we called him Frank, but his name is Neil Francis. So you could have a Neil in the army. So. And much later, after the war, I wrote to Simon Keller, who was by then becoming famous. He was appearing at the Lyric Theatre. And I said, "I'm not trying to sell you anything or borrow any money, but I knew your father in the war. Can you tell me if he's still alive, you see?" And about a couple of weeks later, the letter came back. Very nice death. They said, "Thank you for asking. My father died in Africa." So that was it. The poor old. How many safes have you got?
Oh, several.
All right, carry on.
Yeah, tell me.
Well, that's it, but no. Later in the war, poor old Frank went on an upgrading course to Borden, you see. And off he went as a bomber to be made up to sergeant. He left on the Saturday to go to Borden, and he's due back on the Saturday night the following week. But he never came back. So I didn't report him, so I won't give him a chance for tomorrow morning. But on Sunday morning, about 10 o'clock, the sergeant major rang up. He said, Your bloody mate, Chatter's in the neck. They've been picked up in London." Oh, I said, "What for?" "He's out of bounds." London was out of bounds of army troops. Improperly dressed, he was in a Sambrian bed. I said, "Go and bail him out and bring him back." So off I went. I took me in a cab called Taffy Davis of Escort, a reporter of Scotland Yard, and marched in. I got a real dressing down from the sergeant major there. Not about the discipline of that. I said, no, there's no point in going over me. I said, we haven't got much discipline. We're all the only. So I went, that explains it. Anyway.
Why was that? Why were you saying, why was this
yeomanry?
The yeomanry were known
well,
for.
Well, they're not, they're disciplined. They're all of it. They're all amateur farmers and gentlemen, you see. It's a different sort of army. It really was.
Was it? Yes.
I said, going back a bit to him at Thames Haven, where the chap rang up from, he got on day leave, and he rang up, so I can't come back tonight, I've got to see my gent, he's in Harley Street. We've got a perfectly good dentist. Another chap rang up, after mobilised, and he came back, he put on a charge. He got the Francis honeymoon. It was when people don't believe me, it was really true.
Is this, and they were all in the city yeomanry because they've been working in the city?
They're all city men, you see. Yes. The city mainly, the banks, insurance companies, hockey games.
Yes.
And a few odd like me, you see.
Yes.
We had one full team from the big estate agents in Hanover Square.
Did you?
They joined up with a completely big, big car. But, I shouldn't laugh. One bloke on guard, I don't know, Essex Marsh is terrible at night, you get the fog, and all of a sudden a rifle shot rang out. Oh Christ, we all come rushing out. The chap called Henry Wicks, and he put me in front of the back of the commander. He said, I thought I saw something, I fired a shot. And stood hard down, I got bloody bored. This scum guy with a cork bottle of rum in their pocket, you know.
He wasn't shooting birds then,
well, on the... Well, bad friend called, he's passed a rifle, he goes, well, they worked the bolt like that. One rifle and five rounds, I mean, what were they supposed to do, you know? Luckily, nobody got killed.
So you met Frank, going back to when you met Frank Callow.
Well, he was one troop.
You were in Essex.
Yes. And we went on the move there, went to a place called, we went to Luton from there. That was a bit of a washout. We were on the roof of the factory, the big Skeffco factory. We didn't have both of us young. We had Lewis guns, because the roof was strong enough. That was a bit boring, no action at all there. Very nice big pub there. We there went to Crayford, back with our Beaufort guns, defending a big Armstrong Chidley factory and making tanks. Nothing much happened there.
So what period was that time that you were in Crayford?
Early 41.
Yes.
And then from there we came back to the Slough Trades Estate. Then we went to a place called Langley. That was a bit more exciting. We had two troops here, and we were told to open fire any plane that comes in because it would be made no fly zone. And they were sending them just like 109, single picnic with one bomb. And they're getting in under the radar, you see. So they wrote this no fly zone into any plane you see is troops hostile. So that game of. We were standby all the time. In the meantime, we've been up to Scotland, to Inverary.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yes. Do landing exercises. So we were planning the invasion.
So this was...
Late 1940.
Right.
With combined operations.
Right. And how did you get up there?
Not a train.
Yes.
Yeah. The guns were already out there, see?
Yes.
And we did... Well, we did land yesterday. I was climbing to sling us out and over the beach in the landing craft, swing us out and then slide down the water, into the water. It was purely... It was the first stages. Nobody knew much about it, see? We used to climb down the from ropes on the side. We lost one bloke. He felt he lost his footing and went straight to the bottom.
So you're climbing down the side of...
About 60 foot, I suppose, on a rope ladder.
Yeah, but this was the side of...
The ship.
The ship.
Yeah. You've probably seen it on the film since. But at that time, it was very new. And if you're way down with a pack and a rifle, you don't have much chance.
Yes. Can you remember what ships were there?
Yeah, I thought... We had a parent ship called the Ettrick. And we used to go out to sea and do a cruise down. And then come in and do these assault landings.
Yes. So they were assault landings,
yes. You to, get in the landing craft, dash up the beach. That was all.
And this was 1940?
Late 1940. Yes. And we went back several times here to do it.
Did you? So, and how long would you spend each time, and where were you billeted?
Well, you billeted on the gun site. If you were on the ship, you lived as a sailor, you lived on the ship, see? You became part of their crew, and our lads loved it, you see, got the big cigarette rack and shop. Very, very good, it was. But,
And how did their personnel treat you?
Oh, all right. Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Got very well. Yeah.
And how long would you be on a ship?
Well, about 3 or 4 days.
Right.
Go out to sea. And come back and land. And either in Inverary or Loch Gilpet or on the Loch Fyne coast. Mm. We used to love it. It was really the best part of the war, I think.
Was it?
Yeah really nice.
Mm. Did you have any particular ideas what you were? This was in preparation for?
Before the invasion. Yeah, even then.
Mm.
Of course, it didn't even 4 years later. But we did invade North Africa.
Yes. Oh, you mean, when you say the invasion, you mean the invasion of France?
Yeah, the invasion.
Yes. Yeah. So it was preparation for D-Day, even then.
Through.
Yes. Yeah.
But it was all very, very rudimentary then, nobody knew quite what happened.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first rehearsal for the jet raid, as you probably remember, was a complete failure. Mm.
Was it? Can you tell me something about that?
Well, they wanted to get some more information. It was really a practice run, you see, and they chose Dieppe, and nearly all the Canadians there. The Canadians did the main body, but they were some of our commanders, and it was hush up, very, very secret. And we went down for it from Montrose. We travelled overnight and we hush-hush, we went close to, we knew we were going to somewhere, and we met the guns down. The guns went out before us, and we landed, went to the Isle of Wight and made camp and let us out in the town, I think it was Sandown.
So you were off the ship for that?
Yes. Went in the town, all the bomb, everybody knew we were going there for the Dieppe raid. Both they knew, the Germans knew. It's a failure.
Was that because you had so far to go? You're going from Scotland?
No. The Germans knew we were coming, obviously, and it was badly planned. We didn't have air supremacy, we didn't have enough tanks. It was all very amateurish.
Mm-hmm.
But we learnt a lot from it, see, so the same 1944 game was better.
Mm. How did you get back from that? So you went...
Go by ship. We went by over train.
Right.
And we were called upon. You see, the idea was once they made a landing, we would go and support them. But it was such a flop, we were called off. We came back.
So you just stayed on the Isle of Wight.
We came back to Scotland.
Right. Mm.
It was tragedy, really, but yes. We learnt a lot from it.
Yes. There were a lot of Canadians lost.
Oh, nearly half of the children wiped out.
Mm.
All the tanks were lost. They were hushed up, it was a bad time.
Mm.
Not a lot. Big loss of morale about that.
Mm.
It should never have happened. not here at all.
So after that, you went back to Scotland?
Went back to Scotland.
Yeah.
And we went to a firing camp, which is a, what they call a practice camp. And we fired the guns at targets. Very, very amateurish, really. But it's going a good break. And there, while we were there, I was made a sergeant major. We had a big row with the camp sergeant major in the morning, which I won't go into, and
we can if you want.
Well, we went down into practice to find the guns, you see, and this old RSM, an old dugout for the last 4 days, nice enough bloke, but there was another world, and he was taking off our caps to look after his garden, you know, picking flowers. And my battery commander, Sir Charles Waterlow, he jumped up there when he saw them. He had to go at me, take them off, and they not near pick bloody flowers. So I did. So the camp RSM sent for me, and he had to go, you see. So I did enough. I was doing two jobs. I was doing acting sergeant major and troop sergeant, which is two different jobs, and I was really not fed up, but really pushed. Mm. The sergeant major's job on his own, and a troop sergeant's job on his own. And I was too broke, and my sergeant major's away. So I didn't ask, I wasn't rude, but I said, well, my instructors are, they don't pick flowers, and that's it. And he said, I'll have you in front of the camp commandant and all that. Ranting, raving. So I said, well, it's up to you. And I walked out. We came off the firing point at about 4:30, and my own RSM, old Sam, he said, son, for him, see those orders 5:00. So I thought, oh, Christ, that's it. I want a report. So I wasn't very worried, you know. So I marched in to see the Colonel Marcus. No, he said, Sergeant Vaughan, that's from 5:00, you're the sergeant major of C2 battery. Just like that. Any comments? I'd never got from. So he said, get yourself properly dressed. You're a sergeant major. Get yourself properly dressed. I've got 3 stripes and a gun up. So I've got to take those off and put a crown up. Where do I get a crown? So I crept round the back of the corner of the stores, knocked up the orderly, and he gave me a couple of cough crowns. Well, he didn't give to me, I gave him a pack of cigarettes for him, but I got them anyway. And I was a sergeant major. Very awkward.
Was it?
Well, it meant the only sergeant major flopped, obviously. Well, not flopped, he didn't come to him. And going in. Well, that was it, I was a sergeant major. And I was told on the way back, and I shared the compartment with James Waterlow, he was the battery commander. And he said what had gone wrong, the discipline had slipped. And things weren't too good. He said, I'll give her 6 weeks to get into the shape. She said, break yourself on top, which I did. Well, yeah, I was really, really nasty about a month. I put my people in charge and a lot of things I didn't know I ordered. It's all right, it's finished, all right.
Can you tell me what you were wearing all round about this time? What
that
sort
was
of
us.
Yeah.
That was us.
So what, can you give me details of that?
Well, it's just a two-piece suit. It's
What colour was it and what material was it?
A khaki suit. With a blouse buttoned up the neck, with trousers with big patch pockets, and gaiters and boots. But our normal dress, our service dress, with a khaki tunic, 5 ball buttons, and riding breeches and furs.
When did you wear that?
Well, we were walking out, but not during the war, it all stopped.
Yeah.
And just wore battle dress.
Yeah. All the time.
Well, you could, if you like, wear ST, and sometimes you could wear blue. I used to have a full dress in blue, yes, with the shoulder chains and
yeah.
Well, a dress occasion, you went out to dinner. A very smart uniform.
Yeah.
I'll show you a photograph of it.
Yeah. So where were you? You'd become a sergeant major.
Yeah.
And were you posted somewhere else at this point?
Well, no, I went from we were at Arbroath then, my own battery, but I went back to Montrose, further up the coast. And I was told to get, I really got to work, because we knew we were going abroad, you know, and we knew the time was coming. And I really, when I was told to, I did shake them up, because they got a bit slack. I must say, as the war started, we started losing men. Excuse me, because they all went to Oxford. That's become officers. I think 85% of the regular regiment were commissioned. All the time we were losing men, and the new intake weren't of the same calibre. So we lost a lot of our yeomanry spirit, which is hard to explain. And that they had slipped a bit.
So you were having to train up new recruits all the time, repeating all the training.
And they weren't of the same quality. That might sound elitist, it's not, you know. We got a whole intake from Scotland, they were pretty rough. But we still tried to keep up our own stands, you know. But anyway, it was all right. Then we had a big exercise called Exercise Dry Shot. And the whole of Scottish Command took place at that. It was 110 Force, which later became First Army. And we started off the east coast of Scotland and went right across to the west coast. A big do. And halfway across, we stopped and gave up our guns and marched for about 4 miles. Then we picked them up again. And then we picked them up again at the other end. So when we came back from the scheme, the battery commander called a conference and he said, "Right, guess what's going to happen? It's not going to be a short landing. It's going to be a dry foot landing, which means you've got a long march at the end of it." And sure enough, that's how it happened. Mm. That's later in the future.
Mm. So you were at Montrose at this time,
that's
yes.
That's when we mobilised.
Yes.
We knew we were going. We get this big exercise and then...
And you were having to train up a lot of new people. Yes.
And when we came back, he said, "I want to concentrate on marking." I said, "Because we've got a wrong mark here." So we started doing written markers. Started off 2, finished up 10 miles, and full fat. So it was fit.
Yeah.
Anyway, early November, we went. And, we walked down to the station, got on the train, went to the docks at Greymouth.
Where was that?
Port Glasgow. Got on the ship and off we went. Didn't know where we were going. Sailed for about 4 days out west. So we opened our sealed orders and said we were going to land at Algiers.
So, so you had sealed orders.
Yes.
When did you receive those?
We received them on the day we landed, we embarked, but we weren't allowed to open them until after 4 days.
Right. Right, and who issued who issued those to you?
Well, the company at the war office people.
Hmm. And did every...
Every unit got the sealed orders.
Yeah, right.
Various people going to various places.
Hmm. So, can you remember the ship you were on?
Yeah, no, I can't. I know it's a Dutch ship, and it's... Carolina, you know, they should mix them. They should carry cargo and passengers. Actually, it's luxurious, you know. I shared a little cabin with another one officer. We got to Algiers after about a fortnight, I think.
So it was Algiers you were going to, yeah.
And we split. We had 3 batteries, and each battery had a different job. 3 battery went right across the look, went further up to Bone, further east. They landed there. 3-1 battery went for the main airport in Glasgow. I think it's called Mason Blanche, and they went back to the job to take it and hold it, and we were to follow up, standby, in case we were wanted. And that's how it happened.
So where were you, so you were standby,
yeah.
And where were you?
In Algiers.
In Algiers.
Last about
in the town or
you know,
outside?
It was outside, in the dock area.
Right.
And then after about 2 days, we got caught up, they were in trouble up at, further up, a place called Major's Old Man. And that's where we went. We went by destroyer overnight, landed at Bone, and then did the Trotamole trip down to Major's.
How far was that?
About 200 miles.
So this was your first long march?
Yeah.
How did people respond to that? How did they cope with that first march then? Because it must have been, the weather must have been very different.
No, it wasn't too bad, actually, the first time we got there, but when the rain started, it was bad, you know, the roads were impossible. People were getting bogged down.
And how many were you on that march?
A battery is about 300 men, that's 12 guns, plus all the instruments. Hmm. And we drove through the day, got there pretty late at night, and then just we had to meet the commander in the railway station at Meggers. He got the went on advance, and we deployed around Meggers all back. We were there from, November to about New Year. That's our first taste of real war, isn't it?
Yes. So, after you got there, what were your first duties?
We were light attack, but also anti-tank, you see. We could take on tanks if we had to, but we didn't like it. You're still running?
Still running.
So we deployed all around. It's not really called Medjid or Bab. And we were under observation from the Germans at a big hill called Longstop Hill. They could see what we were doing, so we had to dig in pretty quick.
Yes.
And during the day you could hardly move, because as soon as you moved, they shelled us, you see. And then, our job was to keep the road open, and we had a checkpoint across the bridge, where we dug in a checkpoint. And I spent a lot of time down there checking people out, you know, taking a number. And they missed, and the Americans went across. They got a bit beat up for me.
So where was the bridge leading
across
to?
Across the River Meggers. It's Brady Bridge. The bridge had been blown, and we put a Brady Bridge across. We had patrols out across the bridge. The Germans had patrols as well.
Yes.
So you had to be pretty careful. But it was very boring, actually. I mean, but there you are.
Yes. Boring but dangerous.
Well, yes. We lost a very good man here, cat called Charlie Boxall. he joined us. He said, "Can you find a job or I won't hurt my hands?" So he made a medical order.
Was he a pianist?
Yeah, he was a pianist. He was a pianist for the Russian ballet. He was a beautiful. He used to play in our mess for us, a lovely boy he was. He not long got married, and his wife was expecting her first baby. And he got killed on New Year's Eve. He began to show up all day. And one of our guns had been hit, and he went across the road after another shell landed him. And was killed a lot of them. Buried out there. So he never saw his daughter. She used to come crawl out, church service. Lovely man, Charlie Boxall. And when we leave about second of January, we leave and went back to a place called Beja. Nothing much happened. Still going.
Well, we could turn over here. So you were at Beja.
Beja.